This is Bob, Graz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome to Bob, Graz, and Tom. Happy Monday, everyone. It's Graz and Tom with you for basically the week.
That's correct.
You and me. And you and a dog named Boo. Traveling and living
off the land.
Is it living off the land?
I think it's living off the land.
Living off the rails, I thought it was.
Well, it'll be that
for us, it'll be living off the rails.
It'll definitely be off the rails. Yeah, I'm not so sure I like the timing of the bye week here, Graz, because the Seattle Seahawks, after what we've seen the last couple of weeks, especially yesterday, feels like they actually have some momentum. And we talk about momentum quite a bit. Is there a such thing in football week to week, etc.? Well, if there is, the Seahawks have it. And I'd like to see them keep playing right now.
Well, you're not going to see them keep playing, Tom.
But why not?
Because of the ridiculous bye rule that the NFL has. And it's early in the season. You'd always rather have it later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing well, you want to keep playing, quite obviously. And they played well yesterday. They did what a good team does yesterday. I'm not so sure that I believe that the Raiders aren't the worst team in football.
They might be.
I think they should be. They should be winless at this point. Their win over the Browns was very fortuitous, to say the very least. They're hit by injuries. Their offensive line is chewed up, and the Seahawks went to great efforts to chew it up even more.
Just dismantled it.
But you know, I mean, it six sacks, whatnot. I'm not ready to sit here and say I kind of agreed with Jim Moore's take at the end of the game that it's hard to tell if how much of this was Seahawks, how much of this was the Raiders being horrible. Except that the Seahawks had shown everything but the pass rush in the last couple games. I mean, they'd shown good offense. They've shown great running the ball, good offensive line. Russell Wilson, you know, playing within himself, and he ran a little bit more yesterday. So all that stuff they had been showing already. The defensive pressure was something new, and I'm not sure if that was because Oakland's offensive line is the worst I've seen all year.
Even worse than what you saw from the Giants?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know about that.
I think in that game yesterday when they had backups playing, you had an injured rookie playing left tackle trying to deal with Frank Clark, that's pretty bad.
The one thing I'll say about the defensive line, the performance and the sacks yesterday, if it had just been like two sacks and we came in here, we said, you know what, they probably should have been better against that offensive line, right, because it's just not a good one. But they just manhandled Carr all day long,
well,
right?
They had
a presence in the backfield and then some. I mean, even by the end of the game. So,
and really, by the time it was 20-0 in the first, you know, when it got to there, I mean, they were in a position where they could tee off.
Yeah.
I mean, the Raiders did the token first possession, three handoffs to Marshawn Lynch and punt possession. But from that point on, you were able to tee off on the quarterback, which you're able to do when you have a big lead.
Right.
Against any team, your pass rush is going to be more effective.
Don't have to worry about the big play.
Right. So, but Frank Clark was very, very impressive in that game. And the D-line, look, they did what teams are supposed to do when they play a bad team, and that's handle them easily. That was an NFL blowout by anyone's measure, and they don't have a lot to worry about going into the bye week.
Yeah, I mean, last week we talked about, really there weren't that many concerns about the Raiders specifically, Graz, but anything having to do with London and travel,
that was the X factor,
et cetera. Right, because you don't know because they haven't done it before. As it turns out, it sounds like the players, the broadcast crew, and everybody that we know over there absolutely loved it, made the best of it, and certainly the fans made their presence known. So good job by them, too. It was essentially just a home game. It was a home game where they were matched up against an inferior opponent. They took advantage and they did every single thing that they needed to do. I'm not sure I'm coming away from this game with one thing I want to point the finger at and say, you know what, that needs to improve. Can you?
No. I mean, they were completely. Maybe we're nitpicking now.
We don't have to. We can if you want.
If you want to nitpick, you could say, well, they had some bad penalties.
Okay.
But I mean, you know.
That's just part of the game, though.
Penalties, you know, are only a problem when you lose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Seahawks, as we've pointed out many times, I believe the year they won the Super Bowl, they led the league in penalties.
Right.
So, I mean, it's only a factor when you're losing, when it impacts the game, which seems redundant, but because it doesn't always do that. I mean, it didn't do that yesterday.
No, it's all situational. We learned that last week against the Rams, right? When you have two straight penalties that knock you out of field goal range when you're presumably going to win the game, that's a big, big deal. I told my father the same thing on the phone yesterday because he was talking about the penalties a little bit too. He said, oh, you got to fix that. Well, you'd like to fix it.
It hasn't
right?
been a problem, number one.
Right. And in a game like yesterday where you win 27-3, I mean, what's the difference?
No difference. I mean,
there just isn't.
What are you going to win, 34-3?
Right.
What difference does it make?
Exactly. It's only situational.
Yep.
It's only situational. In the Washington game, when these kids are getting themselves ejected, like, now we can debate whether or not those that rule is fair later.
Sure.
But those penalties and losing a player.
Impactful.
That's obviously impactful, especially
sure.
late in the game. But, you know, you just look at each position group. The run game, the offensive line, defense. I mean,
you got Doug Baldwin back involved, which was
yep.
maybe the only question you had on offense. In all honesty, it was probably the only question you had on offense was: is Doug Baldwin going to be engaged? Is he just the? Is he not the same guy that he was? Is he just a decoy? And that question was answered, and that was the only question offensively that you had.
Yeah, was it injuries or was it just that other players like Lockett and Moore are stepping up? And no, Baldwin's fine.
Moore has obviously become your number three wide receiver. There's no ifs, ands, or buts
nope.
about that. He was very impressive, and he's a find. He's a seventh-round draft pick.
Another seventh-rounder. Think
yeah.
about that. It's at their skill positions. They now have two guys who are impact players between Carson and Moore of the seventh round.
Well, and they got an offensive lineman.
Right.
J.R. Sweezy,
yep.
who I know left but came back, but he's been an impact player as well, also out of the seventh round. So, yeah, you have nothing really to be feel bad about. I think, you know, they did a great job, and it was a great contrast. And I saw Ray Roberts tweet out about it as well, as Gruden complained about the travel and talked about that and how the Seahawks viewed it as a business trip and did it differently. Didn't allow it to be a big deal.
That's such a
as much as they could. That's a Pete Carroll thing.
Absolutely.
I think it was tough on the players. I think it would be tough if they had to do it again, if they had to do it constantly, which they don't. They won't have to.
You mean if there were a team there in division, for example,
right?
And you
right.
had to go back and forth, back
God,
and forth.
How about that? How about a team like that in division?
Tell you what, if I were on the East Coast, or because we keep talking about the Jaguars moving there, if you were Tennessee or Indianapolis or Houston, imagine flying from Houston to
every year
to London every year. Oh, come on.
No, it'd be too tough.
Yeah, it really would be. Yeah.
So I you know, certainly for fans, it was going to be a great time. I mean, the broadcast crew is going to have a good time no matter what. But from the player's standpoint, it was one team that seemingly approached it correctly. The Raiders' strategy of going late, you'd have to say, backfired. Gruden talked about them being tired.
Yep.
They did not function well. They did not execute well. They played a terrible football game. And from the takeaway is the Seahawks have won three of their last four.
They won three of their last four, and the one loss in there was just
a barely loss.
Right, a barely loss, a good loss, whatever you want to call it. And Graz, as I didn't get as much of a chance yesterday to watch some of the other games in the early slate because I was down in West Seattle doing my thing. But I can't find another team that's progressed as much as the Seahawks have since week one. I mean, you want to look at the Rams and the Chiefs, and maybe the Patriots would be in that conversation.
I'll give you one. Their next opponent.
The Chargers or the Lions?
Lions lost to the 49ers in week one.
Yeah, that's true. That's not good.
But
they're 2-3.
And they're right, and they'll be playing Dolphins next week. They're off a win over the Packers. They had their bye this week. They're playing the Dolphins next week. They might be 3-3 for that game. It'll be a much more interesting test for the Seahawks on the road in Detroit.
True.
To see where they're at.
I guess from week one until now, though, Graz, what I've seen the last 2 weeks, they actually, dare I say, they're playing at a championship level. I mean, we're talking about not being able to nitpick. What would you change about this right now, the way
well,
they've been playing?
If you're just going to base it on this last game, you're right, they're playing at a championship level. If you're going to talk about the Rams game, they're not. They're playing at a playoff level.
Okay.
But, you know, so there's nothing to change except you want to see a continuation of the pass rush if you can. I'm trying to think of what else. I mean, otherwise, you want offense to stay status quo.
Yeah, you want to be able to run the ball but they ran it against a good team, or a couple of good teams now. Russell, interestingly enough, his numbers will go down if we're just talking about things like passing yards and things. Because they're handing the ball off as much as they are,
yeah,
and that's fine.
But he's also on pace to throw the exact same number of touchdowns passes he threw last year. 34, which led the league. He's on pace. He's thrown 13. He's on pace to do that. So yards will go down, sure, but who cares?
Doesn't matter.
Quarterback rating goes up. You know,
wins is the most important thing, obviously.
Goes up, and obviously wins are what matters, right?
Right. It's just funny because I think sometimes when I think of Russell, when I think of him being at his best, I think of him making up for deficiencies and extending plays, taking it himself, making the touchdown passes, whatever, and now he's in a situation where he's protected, and he doesn't have to do, not only does he not do everything, I would say Carson really the running backs are the ones who are doing the majority of the work out there.
Sure, he'll have there will be games where he'll have to do a lot more.
Yes.
I mean, that's not entire games, but there'll be circumstances. I mean, they've got a lot of tough games left, you know, a lot of them at home, but still some very difficult games left, you know, that he'll be challenged. But you know you've got that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something he can do. It's not something he needs to do. It's something he had to do the previous 2 years, but it's not something that he needs to do. But it's like having an ace up your sleeve.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case. By the way, I can scramble around. And he did it a little bit. Like I said, they ran the ball a little bit. I mean, they had to at some point to keep that zone read thing alive. Mm-hmm. He had to carry the ball a couple times. And he chose to do it in that game yesterday against the Raiders. Just to keep guys for spying on him, because
right.
I do think that the threat of him running is probably the second most important reason why they're running the ball well.
The second most important reason.
The most important reason is obviously the offensive line.
Yes.
And having a couple of road graders up there and blocking better. But the second reason is Russell still, and they showed it in the highlights yesterday on a couple of plays. They still spy. You see linebackers freeze. They had a great play, and I'm not sure when it was in the game because I actually had a charity event yesterday and I watched the game on tape. So I think it was in the third quarter where they showed a Raider linebacker literally, you know, when he was running the read option, freeze. And it made the middle open for Carson. It made it open for an 8-yard run. I mean, that they still got to respect him. And as long as they have to respect him, that running game's got a chance to be effective.
Yeah.
Coupled with good blocking, which is what they're having. So, yeah, getting back to your original point, it's too bad there's the bye this week because you'd like to see him keep rolling. And I do think it'll be an interesting challenge against the Lions.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that just because you have a week off that they're going to regress. I'm not saying that. But there are those times in the season where you just are hot and you want to keep playing. I mean, we see it at the ends of seasons a lot more, right? When there's a team that's like 6-5, and then all of a sudden for about 5 weeks straight, they just rattle off 5 in a row, then they get into the playoffs, and they're the hot team. That's kind of, it feels like the Seahawks have hit a stride, at least right now.
Sure.
And you'd want that to keep going as much as
although
you can.
Although, as Ray Roberts is, Ray would be the guy to talk to. He didn't believe in momentum at all.
I know, we asked him about that last week, but even he kind of conceded a little bit that game offense. They played against the Rams, that there was something there that they needed to build on.
Well, I think one of the key things to take away from that Rams game was, and we talked about the national press, you know, trying to evaluate the Raider game, and a couple of guys said, well, the Seahawks are, you know, coming off a deflating loss to the Rams.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was going to be, it punched a hole in what their season's hopes were, and et cetera, et cetera. And the Seahawks definitely proved that wasn't the case.
Yeah. I think if they had that Ram game a week later and dropped to 2-4, I think that'd be different. But just look at the record. I mean, they're only 2-3. Now they're 3-3. They're in perfect shape, really, when you look across the NFC.
Yep.
I didn't see that at the time as a deflating loss. And there were a couple other things in this game. I mean, being 9-13 on third down, right, improving on that. If you just want to talk about Frank Clark for 1 second here, I'm not sure how John Schneider's mind works when you're talking about or thinking about paying a guy, but if you're watching yesterday's game, do you think, okay, now he's got it? Or do you say, all right, well, I need to see this for 6 weeks, 7 weeks, the entirety of the season? I mean,
let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm?
Do you think the Mariners would have extended Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto after the end of the season?
At the end of this season?
Yeah. Would they have been able to look at it and said, well, 89 wins was a good season, or would they have looked at it and said, you guys lost control of things, you made bad moves at the trade deadline, Service lost control of the team, you had a fight in the locker room? I'm not saying that they wouldn't.
I think it's debatable, though.
I'm just saying that I would always argue against extending a guy during the season, unless it's always been your plan. I would never react to what I saw in 4 or 5 games and say, well, this guy deserves an extension now.
What do you react to is the question, though, because I'm with you. I wouldn't look at a game against the Raiders and say, oh, sign him up. I wouldn't do that either.
I think you have your plan set and you stick with it, which they did with Earl Thomas and which they're doing with Frank Clark. Now, the plan with Frank Clark may well have been, we'll keep talking to your representatives. We'll try and get something figured out during the season. If that's the case, then that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, don't change what your original approach was.
I don't. Yeah, I'd just be curious to know what that approach is. You're right, I wouldn't abandon that either. I wouldn't.
So that,
if their plan was to sign him in week 10 or something like that, I wouldn't.
Well, I don't know if that would be their plan. Their plan, the only way you'd sign him during the season is if your plan was, we'll keep talking when the season starts. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you don't want us to. Some players don't want you to.
It's just a distraction.
Yeah. So if your plan was to keep talking during the season, you're still talking.
Yeah. I want to ask, we'll have Brady Henderson on later to ask him about how that's going. But I think with when Frank Clark, I mean, the point is, when Frank Clark is playing at that high a level in a game, it raises everybody else, too.
There's no question that he looks like an elite player right now.
You know what, Fraz? Yesterday he did.
An elite pass rusher. How about if I say that, Tom?
Just based on what you've seen this year?
Because
I feel like there's been, I feel like he's had games where he's had bright moments, big moments, but where he's kind of disappeared, too.
Well, I mean, he's a pass rusher.
Yeah.
So you're judging him by sacks, are you not?
Not just sacks.
Pressures?
Yeah, pressures, presence in the backfield. I feel like there's been games where, yeah, he's been back there, but there's also been games where he hasn't. I don't know that I would call him an elite pass rusher in the same way that Khalil Mack is, even though they're different positions.
Well, of course, he's not at that. You're talking about the best in the league.
Yeah, well, that's an elite
Von
pass
Miller,
rusher, exactly. I don't think he's there at all.
I think he's making his way to that group, but you're right. It takes a little more time to figure that out.
Yeah.
But from the Seahawks standpoint, he is.
Yeah.
He's been exactly what they need.
Yeah, he's gotten everybody to elevate for sure. And a couple guys talked about him too, including Pete Carroll.
He's just turned his outlook in a really, really positive way. He's playing as a great teammate. I mean, he's so strong and so supportive with his message. His effort daily, every single day that he practices out there is great. He's taken a leadership role, really reminiscent of some of the guys that were here before. And so almost like he's picked up the mantle and you know, made a statement about that.
Then a little bit more from Quentin Jefferson.
No, he's definitely a catalyst. You know, he's a leader in the room. You know, one of the veterans, he's been here the longest, and, like, we feed off him. You know, Frank brings a lot of energy. You know, once he gets going, you know, we know.
So if he's the guy that they're feeding off, I mean, I think he's, look, if we're talking about a young Seahawk team that we weren't sure what they were going to be at the beginning of the year, like I said, there's been a ton of progression. Frank Clark just falls right in line with that.
Yes,
and I think that that's something that we should definitely be excited about.
It's a little jarring to hear he's the senior guy in the room, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Wow.
How can he be the senior guy? He's only been around here for what? This is his fourth year?
Yeah, I guess that's true, though.
4 years in the NFL is like,
that's longer than average.
Yeah, it's like nine in baseball, right?
Oh, yeah.
Before you know it, a guy's been around for a decade.
It's longer than average.
Speaking of which, because it did occur to me yesterday, when you're watching guys like David Moore be impact players, Carson has been for a little while, Clark Lockett, because Clark and Lockett came in at the same time.
Right.
But this is a big year for Lockett coming back from
injury. Well, he got his contract.
Right, he got his contract, but he had to come back from injury before that. Who are the faces of this team outside of Russell? Russell will always be the face of the team. But when you think about the Seahawks 5 years ago, you thought about Earl, Sherman, Marshawn Lynch, guys right. like that. Maybe
Doug
Bennett,
Baldwin,
sure. But right now, it feels like the guys are Carson, Lockett, Clark, and I'll argue McDougald.
Yeah, he's been a big factor on defense for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a national name he is, but just watching that hit that he laid down on Amari Cooper yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to see guys get hurt, but it's good to know that the Legion of Boom still has some boom, if you
want
to call him.
You got a hard-hitting safety, in other words.
Exactly.
Which you do.
I mean, he absolutely leveled them.
Carr out of the shotgun, has Martin in the backfield with him. Carr stops, looks, throws to the middle. Oh! Incomplete pass. McDougal levels one of the Raiders, who stays down. It was Amari Cooper.
You surprised that wasn't a flag?
Yes, I was.
I was shocked. I mean, I'm happy it wasn't, but I was shocked that it wasn't.
Yeah.
When you see, because he wasn't even moving when he laid down. Usually the ref will throw the flag just for the heck of it.
Well, the helmets collided. I mean, the argument would be the same as it was a week earlier against the Rams, that it was shoulder first and then helmet. And I'm not so sure what was proven, but I was surprised that there wasn't a penalty call. I was glad there wasn't one, but I would not have been outraged if one was called.
Yeah, you would have understood. I mean, especially taking into account some of the other hits that are lesser than that,
right,
that will draw a flag. And we're not just talking about roughing
the
passer. We're talking about wide receiver.
Guy, yeah.
Right. And I don't know that, I mean, was he defenseless necessarily? It was close.
Yeah.
It was close enough where I thought maybe it could have. But
I'd have a problem either way, I guess is how I'd put it. If they had called the flag, I'd have been, all right, I understand it.
Right.
But they didn't. It's like, well, by the letter of the rule, it doesn't look like he did.
Now, that would have kept the drive going, but the Raiders were buried in their own territory at that point.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, would you really have been upset if that had got him a new set of downs?
No.
I wouldn't have at all.
No, I think you had that game from the get-go.
Yeah, Marshawn Lynch didn't really have any kind of impact.
Nope.
They kept him in check for most of the day. I don't know if you caught it because you said you had to watch it on DVR, but there was a play where Lynch ran left, and Mingo just stopped him in his tracks, looked him straight in the eye, and then just took him and threw him down. It was beautiful. Because you don't really see that happen with Marshawn Lynch.
No, although he was, 13 carries, 45 yards, something like that?
Was it 45?
Something like that. Okay. They never really stuck with him, and it was never really a factor.
Right.
Except for that strange sequence to start the second half. They handed it to him three times.
Oh, right. And then the punt, yeah.
And that was the ball game, as far as I was concerned. And it really kind of was. And then, you know, one of the most impressive drives in the game was one that netted the Seahawks nothing when they got the ball back in the fourth quarter with 8 minutes to go.
Right.
And basically clocked it.
But by then you weren't.
The game was over.
Yeah, there was nothing that
you never gave them a chance to even feel good about themselves.
Yeah. As far as just statistically speaking, even the Seahawks, no one Seahawk running back had a monster day, but between the three, Penny actually got worked in a little bit.
Yeah, he did.
I think he was he the guy that handed off first two in the game? I think he was. But what you want to see from them most of the time.
As long as they're cool with it, man, that balance is great.
Rashad Penny.
Penny now in the backfield with a slot left side, play fake. Russell's going to stop, half roll, throw back. It's caught by Penny down the far sidelines. 40, 35, 30, knocked out of bounds. Far sidelines by Darrell Worley. Russell Wilson, half roll to the right, looks back, throws the ball to Rashad Penny, and he just took off down the far sidelines.
All right, I am curious how Seahawks fans are feeling about this one.
Let's talk.
It's going to be pretty unanimous. I mean,
I would hope you're feeling good, boys.
Yeah, if you do have any complaints and you want to nitpick a little bit, the phone lines are open for you. It doesn't matter. But
it can be a love fest, too.
That's fine. We got to have at least one or two of these a year.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, 206-421-3776, 866-979-3776. Your calls are next.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Gross, yesterday was one of those games where it didn't take more than maybe 2 or 3 minutes into the game before it felt like a no-doubter.
I agree. I said to Curtis when I cross-talking with him, filling in for John Clayton, if that wasn't a Seahawk game, it was unwatchable.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're not a Seahawk fan, if you didn't have Seahawk interest, if you didn't have to watch it for work, that's a game that you that's not a game that should make the fans in London excited about NFL football.
Yeah, if you're a Seahawk fan, you're interested in seeing what can Frank Clark do, what can David Moore do, right? Things like
it's
that.
It's always interesting if it's you know, it's your home team, but
yeah.
If it wasn't, it was tough. And if you were a Raider fan, I think you're clicking off around halftime.
Yeah, if you're a Raider fan, I mean, you're thinking, all right, well, is this the last year they're actually in Oakland, or
one more year.
Okay, because like we always talk about.
They may move to L.A., remember?
Oh, right, they were going to spend a year in L.A. and then go to Vegas.
Or San Diego, one or the other.
Yeah, San Diego, I think you're right. I think it was. Yeah, but, and we'll see whether or not it works out with Gruden long term. Right now, though, I'm sure they're not where they want to be. 206-421-3776, 866-979-3776. Corey in Puyallup gets us started. Go ahead, Corey.
How you guys doing?
All right.
Good.
I mean, it was a good win, but I mean, you can't put too much in it, really. It is the Raiders, who, in my opinion, are the worst team in the league and the worst offensive line in the league. So, I mean, everyone's saying Frank Clark was a beast, but, I mean, yeah, I feel like, yeah, that's not really.
All right. Well, let's try and keep it clean, guys. 206-421-3776, 866-979-3776. Let me ask you this, Gross. If that game had been closer, we'll say it was 14-10, would you come into today saying there's no such thing as a bad win? How would you read that?
It would be hard to read it that way, but I would read it that way. Because in my opinion in the NFL, there is no such thing as a bad win. I would tend to blame the conditions, the travel, things like that. And I would say, look, you know, you got a victory, but you still got a lot to work on. And Pete Carroll would be saying the same things. I mean, he'd be talking about it's great to get the win, and he'd be positive and everything like that, but we got a lot to work on. So I think, you know, because you're playing, it's the difference between being a potentially good team and just being a team.
Right.
Is playing well again, you know, and you really had, I mean, again, the Raiders, you just can't overstate the fact that their preparation seemed terrible for this game.
How can they not know? You know what? Going to London is not like it's a brand new thing this year.
Nope, it's been going on for years.
Right, there's 10 years worth of evidence, and it's not just like there's been a handful of teams that have gone. Many, many teams have gone now, many coaches, organizations, etc. How can there not be a definitive way to handle this? Or at least there should be things that you would want to avoid, like arriving there on Friday afternoon, for example.
Especially on the longest flight.
Right. Teams coming from the West Coast.
It'd be one thing if you were coming from New York and it was a five-hour flight and you were just trying to minimize everything, but you're talking about I've flown to London,
mm-hmm.
so I have been there, and I do know that there's definitely an adjustment.
Yeah, there is, no doubt.
So, you know, that was clearly a mistake, but I understand that there's no guarantee. There's no way to guarantee the best performance. I mean, every team is different. There may be some general principles to follow, but, you know, I don't know. It seems to me that what you take out of the London games is that they can be unpredictable.
The weather-wise, the field
conditions can be questionable.
Practice, all that stuff.
Strange things can happen.
They can. It's just yesterday coming out of that, I think that the and it appeared to be utter domination.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I can look at that game and say, oh, well, it's the Raiders. It doesn't matter. Just because of the way that it went from start to finish. It wasn't, you know what they didn't even do, Graz? They didn't, 2 years ago, with the way this offense was, they would have struggled throughout the first half to score at all.
Right.
And then maybe later in the game, they would have run away. It wasn't that at all. The game is so much better.
Yeah, you talked about it in the last segment. I mean, to find something wrong with that performance yesterday, you have to nitpick.
Yeah.
And really the only nitpicking you can do is, well, they had a lot of penalties. I mean, defensively, you've got no issues. You didn't even allow a touchdown. Allowed one field goal late, long after the game was decided. So defensively, you can argue you had your best performance. Your issue on defense had been rushing the quarterback, and I pointed out that the Raiders' offensive line was chewed up, but that's just reality. I mean, it doesn't matter. Sometimes that's what you get. You get the hand you're dealt. And the Seahawks had five or six sacks for the first time they had that going for them. They did what they've been doing the last couple of games, which is running the ball effectively. Their offensive line showed absolutely no evidence that what we've been seeing is a fluke.
No, if anything, they were better.
You know, Rashad Penny was a guy who we were kind of wondering about. He got a chance to play well. Doug Baldwin was a guy we've been wondering about. You know, is he 100% back? Is he still fit into this offense? That question was answered.
Yeah, the Rashad.
And you won by 3.5 touchdowns.
Yeah, the Rashad Penny thing, Graz. The only question about that is, was he worth a first-round pick? It's not about,
sure,
can he be a good player or can they find a way to use him? I think that they absolutely can, and it's probably only going to get better. But that's not really an issue that's dragging them down right now. There's no big elephant in the room about that. Because
they are running the ball effectively.
Yeah, exactly, with a couple of different guys, so no big deal. Did you watch the Chiefs-Patriots game last night at all?
I turned it off at halftime.
Okay. You know how it ended?
Yeah.
Okay, 43-40. Yeah. Now,
because I figured, I said, well, not just the Patriots are back, but, you know, I can't see Mahomes, you know, rebounding from this, even though, you know, the Patriots defense isn't that overwhelming. So I was surprised when I turned back. And
yeah, he did. I mean, those are two good teams. You expect the Patriots to be good. But after the first slate of games was over, Graz, and the Seahawks had put that one to bed, I watched on Red Zone some of the late afternoon games. I didn't see any teams, any of them, that I thought, man, the Seahawks can't beat these guys. Jacksonville was horrid.
Yeah, they were.
Dallas beat them, and I don't think that they're that
40
good.
40-7.
Right, Seattle's already beaten them. I mean,
it's a typical NFL.
It really is. Especially in the NFC right now.
That's the thing to remember, though, if you're the Seahawks. Yeah, you don't see anyone that can beat them, but everyone is capable of laying an egg.
Yes.
Everyone, including them.
Right.
They're in the great middle ground. I mean, the Jets are 3-3.
Yeah, how did that happen? They steamrolled Indy yesterday.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, who would have thought?
Yeah, well, a young quarterback, you expect things to kind of be up and down, but...
Well, more down than up and down.
Well, he did...
You're talking about a rookie.
A rookie, but he did come out and have a great first game. We're talking about Sam Darnold here.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so he immediately puts expectations way up here, but at best, I would expect up and down. I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's true. You talked about a team that's improved the most since early on, and I mentioned the Lions as a team who's done that, and there are several teams who have done that.
Again, because in that same game we're talking about, the Lions look so awful.
Didn't they? They looked like a winless team.
They looked like they were going to go 0-16 again.
And instead, they're 2-3 off a Packers win. And if they beat the Dolphins, they'll head into the Seahawks game at 3-3.
Right.
At home.
And the Dolphins, they had, wait, did they ended
beat
up
the Bears.
They ended up winning, that's right, because they fumbled at the goal line.
Yep.
In overtime. Bears got it, looked like it was going to be over, and then they figured out a way to win it.
Yeah, they kicked the field goal to win it and stopped the Bears, although Trubisky had another good game. So, again, the NFL is a week-by-week. This is what is the key to its popularity. It's a week-by-week deal.
Right. Just not. But looking at that Patriot-Chief game, I guess the reason why I brought that up, I felt like those two teams actually were better than most of what I saw on Sunday. I looked at that game and I said, you know what, this might be the one I've seen today where the Seahawks would have a tough, tough time defending against either one of those offenses. I think you can get to their defenses. The Chiefs' defense is not that great.
No.
It might even be worse than what the Rams have, which is not that great either.
Rams were pretty good yesterday. Good enough.
Against Denver.
Went to Denver and won.
Right, a game that I remember on Friday I had a little bit of doubt about.
Yeah, but they got the 6-0, so it's always tough to win on the road, and that's back-to-back road games for them
right.
in Seattle and in Denver, and they won them both. So the Rams are at the top of the heap right now.
Yeah, alone at 6-0, undefeated. Did you watch Saturday, Gross?
Of course.
It was a classic, just like you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it was.
Every bit.
And I had some guys saying, yeah, nice, you know, really getting out on a limb. Go take a look at how many Washington Oregon games have been classics in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Very, very few.
Are there any other that you would call classic games?
There's none that I can think of.
I mean, there are some.
The Damon Heward game, which he hates to be brought up all the time, but Kenny Wheaton's interception late was probably the last time they had a real competitive close game. Now, I haven't looked at the scores back and forth, but this is the first time I can recall where they're both ranked. They had a game like they had yesterday, or Saturday, I should say. So it's not been a series. It's been a series that's been dominated by Washington. Then Oregon won 12 in a row. Then Washington dominated the last two. It just hasn't featured a lot of great games, yet Saturday was a fantastic game.
Yeah, and it featured a lot of emotion.
And I think was decided on a very poor coach's decision by a very good coach.
We'll talk about that next on Bob Gross and Tom.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Mitchell goes in motion. They hand it off straight ahead for a touchdown. C.J. Verdell wins the game for Oregon.
And we shouldn't have even gotten to that point, Gross. Shouldn't have even gotten to that point. Is there a more heartbreaking way to lose a game like that? First of all, the missed field goal is probably, other than the final touchdown, it's the low point, because that wasn't even that far. Even for college, and I know that there's no gimmies for field goal kickers, especially in that situation. But that's just...
I think that Chris Peterson's a great coach, and I think he made a mistake, period. I mean, that was a great game. You had your senior quarterback, who had a poor first half, having a all-world second half, was 9-for-10.
Especially that last drive.
Was making all the plays in that drive. You had 35 seconds left in a timeout. You elect to run. You elect to bet on your freshman kicker versus your senior quarterback, senior tailback, even though he was a little beat up in the game. I thought it was a huge mistake. I would have definitely given Jake Browning a shot or two at it. You know, he could have played the sideline game, could have gotten it closer down the field. I heard Peterson say that, and he's not going to take the blame for it, and he doesn't have to. He wanted to show that he trusts his team. But I thought, if you're asking me what's a better bet, counting on a freshman kicker to kick a 37-yard field goal when his career long is 41, I think earlier in that game, or your senior quarterback who's been 9-for-10 on making a play or two down the field, you definitely go with the quarterback and at least try and get it further down the field. I did not understand not trying to get it at least five, even just a closer field goal for that matter.
Right.
Made no sense to me. So I thought that was a big mistake. I thought otherwise the game was, back and forth the entire way. You had that first quarter felt like it took 2 hours, but you had special teams plays, you had special teams mistakes. The game had everything, and it was, obviously it was going to be disappointing for whoever lost it, but I thought that Washington may well, and there's no guarantees. I understand that, but if Jake Browning had the halves reversed, was having a poor second half, I could have understood that decision. The half he was having, I just didn't understand the decision. So I thought Chris Peterson made a big mistake. He's made very few of them, but I thought that was one of them.
Even if he just kept the ball on the ground, right?
Yeah, could have run it right up the middle more yards.
I mean, it's not like, because the thing you're always afraid of as a head coach in that situation is that your guy's going to throw a pick or there might be a fumble. Probably more about the guy throwing the pick.
Yeah, but I think you'd have faith in him because of the half that he'd have. I mean, he'd really shown him. He'd really shown what he needed to show, I thought.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was overly conservative, though.
Yep.
I'm with you on that. I mean, at the very least, they could have moved the ball in a little bit further. That drive, I mean, it looked like Washington was making a statement that, you know what, we know that these two teams are competitive, but we are the team right now. Even playing on the road here.
I agree.
We're going to get the job done on this drive right now, the one that we're not supposed to be able to make because we're not at home. But Browning has come of age, or he's back to where he was, however you want to say it.
Was making plays.
Had a great game. A couple of really nice catches there, one by Sample and one by Bacchelia. But, yeah, they did everything they needed to. And then to see it just kind of abandoned there for the field goal. And, again, I thought at that distance, I thought he was pretty safe. But, again, in college.
It's a freshman.
Yeah. It's different. I mean, it just is.
It's different. And you know, I this isn't neither here nor there, but I don't like the rule in college where you can call multiple timeouts on a play like that. Where if you have two or three right. timeouts left, you can just call them consecutively without making a change, without doing anything. In the NFL, you're allowed one.
Right, because it was miss, make, and then miss
right.
is what he ended up doing, right? So he missed the first one, and then he got his leg on the second one.
Yep.
And then they called that last time out, and then he came out and missed it. So.
Yeah, you should be able to, but that's neither here nor there. For Oregon, it was a sweet win. For Washington, a very bitter loss, and it means that game day is coming to Pullman.
Yeah, that's a nice little, well, not for Husky fans because they don't care, obviously, but Kirk Herbstreit making that announcement.
So week 7, complete chaos in college football. So you start to look at the drawing board where college game day should go for week 8, and there's really no debate. It's been a long time. 15-year anniversary is this Saturday for that beautiful flag, Old Crimson. It's been traveling around college game day. There's only one place for college game day to go. Oregon at Washington State. We will see you in Pullman.
Very cool.
Former Cougar broadcaster from way back, it's going to be totally exciting. You've never been to Pullman, right?
Never been to Pullman, no.
You just can't imagine what a small town it is because there are plenty of small towns in America. But to be that remote, mm-hmm. I mean, the biggest town nearby is Spokane, which is 190 miles away and not that big. You're all by yourself out there. It's a total college environment.
Many of these colleges that they go to, though, Grouse, are pretty remote. I mean, I know in the Northwest it's a lot different than it is even in a town like Manhattan, Kansas, for example,
right.
which is remote, but it's not like
it's
remote from Kansas City.
It's an hour and a half from Kansas City.
Or St.
Right.
Louis or wherever. Yeah, so you can get to them. But, yeah, very, very cool for Cougar. You know, I was thinking about one thing, too, with game day, Grouse, because we've talked about the fragmenting of ESPN, I guess you want to call it. SportsCenter isn't what it was. Pardon the interruption. Whatever. Baseball Tonight isn't even really there anymore. College Game Day is the one property that they have left that you could say still resembles its heyday.
Sure.
Right? It still kind of feels the same
it's
way.
It's traditional.
Yeah.
And which is a word that's becoming harder and harder to find in college football. And yeah, as Herbstreit pointed out, there have been stories written about the odyssey of the Cougar flag. Which is flown over. I mean, of all the odd things, to have that big flag flying at every game day for 15 years.
Right.
You tend to kind of look for it, and now that they're actually coming there, is a perfect college football story.
It'd be funny if they went out of their way and somehow organized it so that there was no Cougar flag flying.
Well, I was saying that to Curtis.
Oh,
really? Watch now. They can't get it to Pullman.
They just can't get
that one. Everywhere. They've gotten it to Ames, Iowa. They've gotten it everywhere, but they just can't get it there. Now they'll get it there.
That would be Cougan it.
That would be big time. But that's a big game all of a sudden. You know, Oregon has moved up to 12th in the rankings. Washington State's entered the rankings. Washington State is sort of the forgotten contender. Colorado lost to USC, so they're 4-1. The North is wide open. Washington State, this would be a signature victory if they can get it. And the game is sold out
already.
This would
be the best victory they've had in...
In a while.
Yeah, forever, basically. Now, are they still in it?
For what?
For the college football playoff? It's outside. I know it's an outside shot, but...
Well, you had a bunch of... You know, it would have been helpful if Notre Dame had lost to Pitt, but you had a bunch of teams in that top 10 lose this week. So, you know, I mean, it could come down to... That's the point I was making. Right now, I mean, Alabama and Clemson are locks You know, Georgia lost. They could be a two-loss mm-hmm. team. They could be a three-loss team. Ohio State is an undefeated team. So it's a very long shot for the Pac-12.
Yeah.
But just, if Washington State knocks off number 12 Oregon, knocks off Washington.
Be pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, it would be.
That really would be unbelievable. I mean, forget about the college football playoff, but winning that game, getting game day there.
Well, after losing their you know, through graduation, their starting quarterback, through tragedy, his replacement, in a year that was supposed to be a rebuilding right. year, it'd be a remarkable achievement.
It really would. All right, Groz, sacks and lots of them, plus every other great play from yesterday's game in London. I'm Bob Groz and Tom.